we are going down to 22116 in regards to Taylor Williams, DVN. Tracy, if you'll read us the summary.
Case 22116, the complainant is William and Terry Young. The respondent is Taylor Williams, DVM. Sugar, an 11-year-old male mixed breed dog, was seen by respondent and her associates for several ailments in 2021 and early 2022. During those visits, diagnostics and blood work were performed as needed. On March 14, 2022, the dog was presented with to a veterinarian in Texas, where the dog was diagnosed with valley fever and fluconazole was started. A couple days later, the dog passed away. Complainants state they presented the dog to respondent on three occasions regarding the dog's cough and were advised that there were no issues. According to respondent, at no time was she or her associates advised that the dog was coughing. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred and was moved and seconded the board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Okay, thank you. We have no complainant. We do have Mr. Stoll here representing.
Monitoring only.
Monitoring only. Alrighty. And Dr. Thompson, you are the lead.
Yes, yeah, so with this case, I feel like this is one of those cases of just, I shouldn't say just, but a communications issue. It's a kind of a she said, the owner felt that they had conveyed to the veterinary staff that the dog had a coughing issue at multiple visits, and according to the medical records and the patient being seen by multiple doctors, it wasn't just one doctor, that complaint was never put into the actual record. In listening to the recordings, she mentioned it to the receptionist perhaps at the time of the appointment, and then there was kind of questions as to whether or not she really did mention it to the doctor during the exam. Based on the way that the doctor treated the patient, there wasn't an issue of a cough. They were addressing the other issues that were problematic. At one point, there was a recommendation to put the pet on heart medication, which, if there had been a cough, then that may have been part of the problem. And the owner had declined. It wasn't until later that she had approved to be on heart medication. No doubt, the testing came back positive for valley fever at the vet in Texas, but whether or not it was something that the doctor here missed, because again, there wasn't any sort of clinical signs that correlated with that, which would have led them to make that diagnosis, so, or run that test. So I don't feel that there's a violation in this case, but I'm open for discussion.
I would agree. The complainant focused like a laser beam on valley fever, mm-hmm. and I question whether that was the issue in this dog. The comorbidities, I don't think there ever was a definitive diagnosis. We have a positive titer, and we look at those radiographs, that is an infiltrated pneumonia. Now, valley fever can do that, but it doesn't usually.
Right.
So, multiple doctors, multiple possibilities here as to what was going on with this dog. So I would agree at that point. I don't see a violation.
Is that a second?
Yeah, that's okay. A second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there to dismiss this case? Is there any further discussion?
No, I would just say valley fever is a very commonly diagnosed disease. I think it's an honestly overdiagnosed disease in many cases. There's cases of animals and people dying from it. Not often. They can get very, very, very sick with it, but they usually respond to therapy pretty darn well, even if they've been near death's doorstep. So dying from valley fever without it something else is not a very common thing. So it's very common to have it.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So all those in favor of dismissing case 22-117, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Case is dismissed. Or I'm sorry,
116.
Yes. Myself here. Okay. So moving on down to case 22-117 in regards to Timothy Chiasson, DVM. Please note that Dr. Nosley is recused on this item. And Tracy, will you read us the summary?
Yes.
I am.
Case 22-117, the complainant is Rome Hotel. The respondent is Timothy Chiasson, DVM. On February 1st, 2022, Leah, a 3-year-old female European Doberman, was presented to respond for a pregnancy check. Complainant reported that the dog was bred on January 3rd, 2022. Respondent explained that it was too early to perform radiographs to confirm pregnancy and recommended a recheck in 3 weeks. On February 17th, 2022, the dog was presented to respondent for pregnancy radiographs. Radiographs could not confirm pregnancy. Therefore, respondent recommended to keep treating as if pregnant and repeat radiographs the following week. On February 22nd, 2022, radiographs were repeated. Respondent stated that skeletal development was not detected, therefore he felt that the dog was not pregnant. Ultrasound was recommended to be more definitive. Complainant declined. On March 8th, 2022, the dog whelped 6 puppies on her own before she had to be presented to an emergency facility where a C-section was performed to remove the other puppies. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred and was moved and seconded. The board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Okay, thank you, Tracy. Let's see, we do not have a complainant nor a respondent, and we've got Dr. Wright, you are the lead.
All right, thank you so much. So yeah, after going through this and seeing pregnancy in dogs can be a very difficult thing. Unfortunately, outside of people and some of the higher order apes, you can't just pee on a stick and find out if you're pregnant or not. So that's a little rough. So we have to rely on other diagnostics. An x-ray is kind of the easiest diagnostic and the least expensive way of determining pregnancy, but it's also very, very limited because it's based on when the fetal skeletons calcify and when that calcium will be picked up by the actual x-ray. So it can be variable, but typically it's after 45 days. Yeah, so it's around that 45-ish day mark. Ultrasounds can be picked up as early as 16 days if you're really good at picking up fetal vesicles. So I mean, ultrasound is a lot more sensitive, but it's a lot more expensive and not as available. So looking through this, things were done like they were supposed to be done, and from what I can tell, the x-rays were done, and the patient or the client was advised to just assume we're pregnant, which is kind of always my instructions too. It's assume you're pregnant, and after 62 days we don't have puppies, maybe we weren't. It's just things were done, just not the test didn't come back as conclusive for the pregnancy, but that's not a violation of a statute, unfortunately. It's just one of those things that happens in life. Kind of like people that go to the bathroom and end up with a baby and didn't realize they were pregnant. I've seen that on, what's it, E?
Yes.
But I don't see any violation of statute based on this. It's just one of those situations that the body is weird sometimes, but I would make a motion to dismiss this with no violation.
Second.
Yeah, I would second. And also the claims that if he had known, he would have fed differently. But yet, if you look at the medical records from the specialty hospital when they went for the C-section, mm-hmm. for the past 3 weeks, he had been feeding puppy food.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it doesn't really pan out.
And so to confirm, had an ultrasound been done, would that have been definitive or not even necessarily?
Well, probably more likely chance of finding it because you're going to find the actual sacs or something in there. You're looking for the fluid balls.
Okay.
And apparently, balls, yeah. But apparently the amniotic sacs were visible, or they should have been visible on the ultrasound because the dog was pregnant.
Okay.
So I can't guarantee we would have found it, but I assume.
And again, I never knew. I've learned so much about pregnancy and dogs, but never knew you fed them puppy food if they were pregnant. And so, was there an issue with feeding the raw diet that he?
Well, so
I mean, other
there's
than,
always an issue with that.
Oh God, yeah.
I was going to say that. I think you know when I look at that, and he mentions that in the previous litter he fed a different food and vitamins and all these things,
okay.
And I'm like, well, that's great. You know, that's trying to ensure the best outcome, but. I work in a shelter. I have dogs that come in that are emaciated and have no problems giving birth and have healthy puppies.
Right.
So whether or not that would have changed the outcome, like there were other things, you know, sometimes things just don't work out the way that you want them to, and it's, you know.
And the doctor told you to assume she's pregnant.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and the nutrition is more to take care of the bitch because they're gonna take care of the puppies. Their
right.
body does, they end up emaciated
right.
and not doing well, not necessarily the puppies.
Right.
They typically are great. They're little parasites, you know.
Yeah. They're just going to get the nutrients in.
Yeah. But the puppy food is extra
puppies,
calories
so.
Is what it is. So you're not
okay.
increasing volume. You're increasing caloric intake is basically why
yeah.
recommend puppy food.
I mean,
most
I lived
of us,
off of Fruit Loops when I was
so
pregnant.
Yeah,
so.
The body's crazy at what it can do.
Kids are mostly okay, I think.
But, and there's a lot of questions, or I shouldn't there's debate around what to feed during pregnancy, what do you need to do, what kind of supplements. And we do know that a lot of people like to supplement a lot of extra calcium because, of course, you're growing bones, all that kind of stuff. The problem is the body gets used to that dietary calcium and doesn't mobilize the ability to get it from the bones, and sometimes can't keep up after actual birth, and you can have some major issues with that. So switching to a puppy food is pretty much always a safe thing, but unfortunately, I always tell people when it comes to food, there's so much more marketing than there is actual science, and everybody's gonna have a different opinion, and everybody's wrong with me. But basically, there's so much different conversation around dietary feeding.
Well, I gotta weigh in on whether it makes a difference on how you feed them. It does, and for generations after, it does, and that's been proven. It started out doing studies with Jewish people in concentration camps.
Oh yeah, that's starvation. That's a little different.
The starvation.
That's a little different than feeding this bag of food or that bag of food.
But it matters the right micro macro minerals, moving the calcium after birth, postpartum, all that comes into play. So it does. What happens to that female when she's pregnant determines how productive every one of those offspring will ever be.
Oh, for sure, but then you can't compare starvation.
It will either heighten or limit their genetic potential will either be reached or not reached due to what happened when the female was pregnant, no matter what species it is.
Well, we know a lot of that around DHAs, EPAs, the omega acids in development of the brain. But
I took
between feeding an adult food, between feeding an adult food or puppy food, there's absolutely no evidence that shows
it does make a difference what you eat.
But between starvation and not, yes. But between this bag of food and that bag of food, no. I would love to see a study that shows that. That's not going to be there.
Madam Chair.
No, thank you for that.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
I know the results.
The owner declined the more advanced diagnostic of an ultrasound, which would have most probably, you're saying, Dr. Wright, would have shown something?
I would assume so.
Since
I said
they
I can't
do
guarantee
after 16 anything. Days?
Yeah. And that's the crux of it, is there's another way of, and we could have
it's
done
your
LH
ultrasound,
test,
what probe you're using, like there's like so many variables. And every diagnostic.
If I was doing the ultrasound.
Right.
I mean.
The puppies were born.
They were going to have complications or not have complications, regardless of whether you knew she was pregnant or didn't know.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, good discussion. A motion and a second to dismiss case 22-117. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Case 22-117 is dismissed. Let's move on. We're going to do case 22-119, regards to Selena Velasquez, DVM. Tracy, please read us the summary.
Case 22-119, the complainant is Salvador Torres. The respondent is Selena Velasquez, DVM. On April 7th, 2022, Sirius, a 20-week-old male pit lab mix, was presented on emergency to respondent's associate. The dog tested positive for parvo, and a treatment plan was discussed with the complainant. A 24-hour plan to hospitalize the dog for supportive care was approved. Later that morning, the dog was rounded to respondent. She evaluated the dog and contacted complainant with the current status and recommendations. Complainant was not satisfied with the care that was provided and had a family member pick up the dog against medical advice. Later that day, the dog was presented to Camelback Animal Hospital for outpatient care. The dog returned approximately every other day for recheck and sucking fluids until the dog recovered. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded the board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Okay, thank you. We do not have the complainant available. We do have Mr. Stoll. Are you monitoring?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and Dr. Nosley is the lead.
Okay, thanks. In this case, it was communication where is the primary issue here, but I would clarify that it seems to be more of a understanding on the part of the complainant. I think the respondent actually handled this parvo case very well in terms of both the medicine and the communication, but there was an obvious disconnect there. But as far as a violation on either ethics or medicine, I see none. And I would therefore like to hear, see if anybody else found anything, but I would make a motion to dismiss with no violation.
Second. Yeah, I didn't see any violation. I guess I look at some of the communication though, and mm-hmm. I feel that the respondent actually communicated well with the complainant. It's whether or not the communications with the previous doctor, you know, were those foundations really well set? Hey, this is gonna cost you X amount of dollars, and not realizing that that's just for one day. What are the expectations that this patient is going to, so I feel like that.
You mean the admitting doctor?
The admitting doctor, uh-huh. Yeah. You know, and so you have a client or who has put together these funds and wants to have mm-hmm. them thinking that at the end I'm gonna have a dog, not understanding that it's gonna be days worth. And you know, yeah. So I feel like the actual respondent had great communication,
right.
And set those expectations. It's just that's hard to come off of if they've already had other expectations or, you know.
Yeah.
So
I think that's a real good point as far as the him maybe not understanding what was happening here mm-hmm. in terms of the extent of the hospitalization.
Yeah, and I mean, I applaud her for saying, hey, it doesn't make any sense for me to put the tube in for 12 hours and take
yeah.
it back up because you're going to take them home, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, what was set up originally is, so she was kind of...
That led to some of the
yeah.
issues.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
I was just going to add that I think any of these cases like this where there are multiple different ways of providing treatment, having that financial discussion up front is so critical because most of the time a client will have X number of dollars that they can spend and you have to figure out how you're going to do that and get the best outcome. And if you spend it all on day one and now you have nothing for day two, three, mm-hmm. five, you haven't done anybody any good. And I think that might be part of what we're...
But we've seen plenty of cases where it's like, well, I would have done anything. Well, no, you were explaining that you're financially constrained.
Yeah.
Well, but I would have done anything. So I think that a veterinarian, unfortunately, gets put in between a rock and a hard place. Because in human medicine, you don't deal with this, right?
Yeah, but
you
as
just
long
do
as
best
it's documented
care.
That you did
But you can
it,
document it,
that
and they'll still say that isn't what happened. You know,
yeah,
I mean, it's always
I think on the,
two sides.
At least from my time on the board, the cases where the veterinarian has documented estimates and what they've talked to the owner about, we've tended to believe that that's what happened if it was in the medical record. So you're going to have these. This is not going away.
And it's Parvo.
The cost of care is not going away, and talking financial discussions is not going away. So you better figure out how to do it, because...
Right. But I've heard plenty of Parvo conversations, and of course hospitalization has better outcomes. You know, I mean, it just does.
And if you send them home, so if they choose to treat at home, what are you giving them typically? You're
well,
obviously
that's exactly.
Depends.
Some veterinarians are not comfortable with
yeah.
what other veterinarians are because
okay.
I've seen sub-Q fluids go home and pre-drawn injections and all of that. And there's
right.
other veterinarians who are like, no.
Yeah.
I okay. will administer some sub-Q fluids here. Here are orals, not maybe going to keep them down. So, I mean, I think that definitely has to fall to the veterinarian's comfort level because...
Okay.
Oh, I would agree.
Because what if they
that.
Give the injection wrong? Then whose problem is that? They
yeah,
stored it
that's
wrong.
That's the individual yeah. doctors.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there's problems both ways. And this was an emergency clinician.
And that's
this wasn't her
right,
client.
Particular.
And she kept pushing, you need to go to... If we're not going to keep hospitalizing this puppy, you need to
yeah.
get to a primary veterinarian.
Okay.
And that was her reason for not. And I happen to agree in her particular case. There are doctors who will do that, and sometimes it's a problem. But if that's
sometimes
all
that
you can do, to Dr. Jane's point, if that's all you can
that's
do financially.
Right.
Okay. Yep, right. But I also feel like it's hard in the emergency room because that's not your regular patient. But Do the folks that come in actually have a regular doctor? Just like people that hit the human ER, right?
Right?
So you're like, sorry, I can't do anything else. Go to your regular doctor. Well, I don't have one and I can't get into one for 6 weeks either.
Yeah.
Like, so, I mean, there has to be some, and I'm actually quite surprised at how many doctors aren't familiar with the CSU outpatient protocol for Parvo. Like,
that actually is
there
rates
is a
of success.
Right.
Like,
right. Like,
it is doing
success.
So I would argue opposite.
Yeah.
So,
I have seen
great success and terrible failure with the CSU.
Yeah, but you see that with emergency treatment as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Have a patient
absolutely.
In for $14,000 and still die. Like,
yep.
So,
oh,
I
absolutely.
Mean, it's
you can
Parvo.
Spend $100 and they live, and you can spend $14,000
right.
and they
it,
pass,
so,
but it's with any medical thing.
But
in this
you know,
particular case,
she didn't do anything in violation.
He said I don't have a veterinarian, and then he found one immediately.
Which is great.
Which is great.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so.
Great.
That's what should have happened.
Yeah, that's, yeah, ideal.
He made the complaint about the veterinarian, but actually ended up doing exactly what she wanted him to do.
She did, yeah, sound advice.
Good point.
Yep.
And I think the biggest take-home message is parvo shouldn't be, it shouldn't exist anymore. The vaccines we have, these manufacturers have put huge amounts of money and research into vaccines we know are safe and supremely effective for parvo. It should not exist as a disease, and that animals are getting it just because you didn't want to get a $20 vaccine in the past. That's frustrating.
So many are from vaccine, I mean, at least that I've been seeing lately, or they bought the vaccine from a feed store. We just don't know how it was handled. You know, even manufacturers are like, we don't guarantee those ones. We don't know.
No, they don't care, because I mean, you throw it in the seat in your car, and then you go to the Fry's and buy some food, and then go home and finally do it. And we know this all the time. Vaccines are very fickle things. You should not get them from anybody but a veterinarian, where we know they've been stored properly. They should have been stored properly.
And this puppy should have had a booster.
Yeah.
He had it.
Yeah, because he had the beginning one. Mm-hmm. So that was
So we've had a second. Yeah, for a while.
Very second.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Okay. That was this session.
You can tell we have a light. I was like, we have a lighter agenda this morning. Because I think everybody's feeling. Okay. So we have a motion and a second to dismiss case 22-119. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Case 22-119 is dismissed. Keep moving along here. Case 22-120 in regards to Nicole Upsey, DVM. Tracy.
Sure. Case 22-120, the complainant is Kayla Siegel and the respondent is Nicole Avja, DVM. On March 3rd, 2022, Mishu, an 11-year-old male domestic short hair cat, was presented to respondent for chattering teeth, now eating, drooling, and a foul odor coming from his mouth. The cat was examined, a dental procedure was recommended, and scheduled for the following week. The cat was discharged with oral pain management. The next day, due to the cat's continued pain, complainant made an appointment with Arizona dental specialists. Additionally, she contacted respondent to inquire about increasing the cat's pain medication. Later that day, the cat was evaluated by Arizona dental specialist, where severe inflammation and a laceration under the left side of the tongue were identified. The cat was anesthetized for radiographs, biopsy, and surgical repair of the defect. A feeding tube was placed, and the cat was transferred to an emergency service for overnight care. On March 16, 2022, the cat was presented to Arizona dental specialist for a recheck. The cat continued to deteriorate. Pathology results were consistent with squamous cell carcinoma. On March 20, 2022, the cat was humanely euthanized at home. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded the board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-1, with Dr. Dow opposed.
Okay, thank you. We do not have the complaint. We do have Mr. Stoll monitoring again.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And Dr. Thompson, you are the lead.
So this case, obviously we had an unfortunate outcome. The cat presented for pain in the mouth, and an exam was performed. For those of us who practice, it can be very difficult to get a thorough examination of the mouth. It sounds like the cat was difficult to handle. Ideally, sedation would be a great opportunity to look in that mouth a little bit more, but at that point in time, it was not an option at the clinic due to the scheduling. And they put the cat on for a dental the following week. In this case, the cat went downhill, was able to get into a specialty hospital, and it was found the cat had a cancerous mass. I guess the only thing that I questioned was, was there an opportunity we don't necessarily have to completely anesthetize the cat for an exam. Was there an opportunity for some sedation? But I don't know if that's kind of a game time decision. You have to look at everything that's going on. If, she really thought it was more of a dental disease issue than getting it scheduled for that dental was what was a correct way to move forward. So I don't necessarily see that there was an absolute violation. I don't think that there was any negligence on the doctor's part. It just was a situation where, even if she did a better, just seeing the pictures of where the lesion was located, that was really far under the tongue. That would be difficult I think, in any cat to get a good look at that while they're completely awake. So I'm not sure that there was any way that she really may have seen that with a full oral exam without sedation. So I would go along with the investigative committee and say no violations.
I'm gonna second that. I'm also gonna say it's kind of weird and frustrating to me where in veterinary medicine we've come to this position of you have to make a diagnosis 100% of the time in the first exam within 15 minutes for less than $150. I don't know where we got that mentality in veterinary medicine, but it takes multiple times. Well, yeah, say,
doctors are good at it.
Doctors are good. I mean, on the human side, that is not going to happen. I had to go in last week years. For an appointment just to schedule an appointment with a surgeon. It was a pre-consult consult. And it's like, we can't do everything in one appointment. So the fact that we don't have something done in the exact same time, we don't have the ability to sedate and anesthetize right now, we'd have to do that another time. I see absolutely no problems with that. It's frustrating sometimes, it sucks, but that is not an issue with me at all. And it's actually more frustrating that a complaint was made based on that type of
thing. And the dental specialist called the next mm-hmm. day for records, that's impressive. Mm-hmm. Like for my own dental specialty thing, they're like, yeah, months, good luck. Yeah. Yeah. But the fact that it only been going on 2 days and the veterinarian didn't offer us, like if it had been going on for a really long mm-hmm. time and it took forever to get him in, you could kind of see where the veterinarian might be like, this can't go on much longer. Like you're already on prednisone, you're already on methimazole, you're already on all these things. But the fact that it was only 2 days, and then it was great that they reached out to a dental specialist the next day, right? The cat's chattering, not happy with this. I'm like, that's impressive. So I don't know. It's a really horrible diagnosis anyways.
Medications. Like, I mean, I think they did what they should have, knowing that it was going to be a little bit longer of a wait. And then I think they adjusted those pain medications. And if that cat had continued to show pain despite pain medications, they could have made the decision to get it in sooner. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We don't know that because it didn't go that long.
No. That was impressive.
Yeah.
I'm gonna disagree here with some of this. And I lost a cat to this very condition. So I might be clouded a little bit there. But the not seeing this lesion or did lead to some unnecessary suffering of this cat. Odor should have been a key. She was able to see the outside of the teeth, but that's about all. But there were obviously a lot of odor. And take it from me, with this neoplasia, there's a lot of necrosis and a lot of odor. So in my mind, it'd be, and something else might be going on here. This might be more than just a dental issue. So then we get into this issue of a sedated exam versus a procedure, a dental procedure. Okay, well, I can't just throw a dental into the hospital. I understand that. But we all do sedated exams. I can't see what I
mean. Mm-hmm.
Sure. I can't see what I need to see here, and I suspect there's a problem here. Why don't I give a little bit of dexmedetomidine, take a look, and now I can go to the owner and say, we've got a huge lesion under the tongue.
But did they? Because the dental specialist found that 2 weeks later. So was there a huge lesion at the time?
Well, there had to be.
It was 2 days.
If you looked at those pictures.
Well,
and the symptoms in the cat.
The
symptoms in the cat.
I think
I have general experience with the symptoms in the cat. This is not dental disease. This is not the picture of dental disease in the cat. This is a picture of something else is going on in that mouth.
Yeah, but they got that cat in.
What about it could have been stomatitis.
They got that cat in less than 2 days because it had been going on two days. Tell me what practice is scheduling.
Which is good.
Days.
That's all good,
yeah,
and I agree.
They didn't do anything wrong.
But I only question, why don't we complete this exam by giving a little sedation?
I think it's a very dangerous comment to make because are we setting a standard of care where we have to do everything at one time, especially when most of us are so overworked that we're doing 15 to 20
minutes,
and I can't put a sedation in there.
I can't see in the mouth adequately, and I want to do
so
a little sedation
like
to
that.
Do it.
Right now,
so you schedule a procedure? Oh, I do.
That today?
Well,
no,
I would do it almost on a daily basis.
If you have the ability to, yes, but to try and make that as that should be done,
but
that is a very dangerous comment.
We're not talking about
standard of care.
We're not talking about anesthesia here.
We're talking about sedation. That's not just
a willy-nilly. Well, that's not minor.
Yeah, that's not a willy-nilly thing, especially in an animal.
In order to discover that this cat has cancer in its mouth?
If it has a lot of problems in its mouth and has a problem swallowing, and now you sedate it, and now it chokes on itself, on its own saliva, because it can't swallow because it's got something going on. I mean, you got to be really set up and hired for that kind of stuff. You can't just go under sedation and say, you might be able to, but I think that's a
progression of the case was fine, but we should have known this at the initial exam.
So I appreciate all of the discussion, but we've got a motion to dismiss. We do have a second, right?
I think I seconded it.
Okay. We've had a lot of good discussion and obviously a difference, but let's go ahead and vote on this. So all those in favor of dismissing case 22-120, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
The motion passes to dismiss case 22-120 in regards to Nicole Pachu. Okay. Thanks. I didn't like the discussion today. We are now going to case number 22-121 in regards to Dorothy Nelson, DVM. Please note that Dr. Thompson is recused on this item. And Tracy, if you'll read us the summary.
Sure. Case 22-121, complainant Daniel Boyd. The respondent is Dorothy Nelson, DVM. On April 18th, 2018, Paris, a 12-year-old male domestic short-haired cat, and Hershey, a 13-year-old domestic short-haired cat, were presented to respondent for evaluation for a variety of chronic illnesses. Based on the pet owner's conduct in the exam room and her admissions and how she was caring for the cats, respondent reached out to the Humane Society for direction. Due to the time of day, Humane Society recommended calling law enforcement to report an animal cruelty case. Police were dispatched and the cats were seized. They remained with respondent overnight and were transferred to the Humane Society the following day. On April 25th, 2018, the cats were returned to complainants, the pet owner's parents. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded the board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Okay, thank you. We do not have the complainants present. Mr. Stoll is
monitoring all of
them. Monitoring. Okay. And Ms. Frost, you are the lead on this item.
I'd like to make a motion to go into executive session for legal advice.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to go into executive session. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.